You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, June 3rd, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, an abridged version of the Majority Report, I will be hosting the Tom Hartman radio program this afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. Today on the Majority Report, Senator Frank Lautenberg passes. Chris Christie now has a decision as to who to appoint. And I'm unclear what the New Jersey statutes are in this regard, but it appears that that person would then have to run in a special election in November and then run again in the scheduled election in 2014. We'll dig into that on today's program. Turkey dealing with massive protests that emanated out of the beginning of destruction of a massive park in Istanbul to make way for a massive shopping center and condo development. Also, Bradley Manning trial starts today. We'll give a brief context of that. The Social Security and Medicare trustee report came out on Friday. All's well for Social Security and things a little better for Medicare. And the Supreme Court rules that the swabbing of DNA upon arrest, even if the arrest later turns out to be a mistake, not such a big deal. You go into a database, we use it maybe to track you or members of your family to investigate other crimes, who knows? And finally, seems like Ben Bernanke's been reading Chris Hayes' book on the failure of the meritocracy in this country. All that and more on today's abridged version of the Majority Report. Let's start right in with Frank Lautenberg. He was 89 years old. He's been serving since 2008. He had planned to retire from the Senate when his term was up in 2014. He had left the Senate, I guess, about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more, after first coming in back in the 90s, early 90s, was it? And His second term in the Senate, he was, in some respects, better from a progressive standpoint. He was a guy with little seniority at that in the second go-round, but he did his best to stir things up. He had announced, or I should say, he had pursued improving federal gun safety laws. He had looked for federal resources to help New Jersey in terms of Sandy. And he was also reforming U.S. chemical safety laws by working through a bipartisan sort of group to modernize the Toxic Substance Control Act, which basically said we need to know what pollutants companies are putting into our environment. So Lautenberg gone. The question now, and it appears that as far as Lautenberg is concerned of filling that seat, Christie is tasked now with appointing an interim acting senator who then would face a special election presumably in November. You would have it at the same time. It becomes a little bit tricky for Christie at this point because he is up for re-election in this year, 2013. And those are one of those elections where you don't want too much activity going on because Christie assumes he will win. And the size of his victory will be significant when he decides whether or not he's going to run in 2016 for the presidency. If you appoint a Democrat, say someone like Cory Booker, who I think people should know, regular since this program should know at this point that I see Cory Booker as perhaps a nice guy, but also with an incredible corporatist streak. And at this day and age, I think that's one of the worst things that Democrats can add to. So you've got Lautenberg, who was in, I should say, from 82 until the mid-90s, I believe it was, or early 2000, and came back about, I guess, 6 years later after
Torricelli.
Torricelli
had to quit. The previous Senator Robert Torricelli had to quit because of a corruption investigation.
Surprise, surprise. And so the question is, will Christie appoint Booker, thereby theoretically bringing out less Democrats in 2013 because Booker will be the presumptive favorite to hold that seat until 2014, scaring off probably a lot of competition. In the event that Christie appoints a Republican, Booker will be running in 2013, presumably, because he would want that advantage to build his campaign leading into 2014. He would want that advantage, and he would drive more Democrats out to the polls in 2013, cutting into Christie's lead, assuming that Christie would win because his poll numbers are pretty good in New Jersey. And Christie doesn't want that because he wants a blowout to show that he can appeal across the board to Americans, despite the fact that chances are he's going to drop out of the 2016 presidential sweeps the day after New Hampshire, would be my guess. So this will be interesting to see how this plays out. And did I wonder how it will play out in the question of any type of filibuster reform? Presumably there has been talk, or at least I've heard talk, whether it's Harry Reid, whether you believe it or not, there's been renewed talk about it. Harry Reid is talking about it. Merkley is talking about it, who's been a big proponent. Some have suggested that John McCain's war that he's now having with the Tea Partiers in the Senate may lead to him endorsing some type of filibuster reform, or at least tacitly endorsing it. Some, and we've talked about this on the program, that President Obama's nomination of three justices for the First Circuit, excuse me, the 11th Circuit in Washington. You have to forgive me, folks. I was at my college reunion this weekend, so I'm good not times. Playing with a full deck. Yeah, good times. Not playing with a full deck. The Washington, D.C. Circuit Court. Three appointees supposedly daring the Republicans to obstruct them and therefore supposedly creating a push for filibuster reform. So this will be interesting to see how this plays out, and we'll have more on that as the week progresses. I don't doubt it. Bradley Manning is the Bradley Manning trial starts today. One of the biggest pushes we're seeing at the beginning of this is by media outlets demanding a stenographer to record everything, which just seems an absurd request to have to make. I mean, perhaps the only thing I can think of is the court that Fidel Castro faced when he had to go back and write his own account of what took place in that court while he was imprisoned back in Cuba. And I think what was the book, History Will Absolve Me, came out of it, was his memoir. I mean, it's just absurd that this roadblock to reporting is being placed in front of major media outlets. And hopefully we will see some movement in that regard. Just to give you a recap of what's going on with Manning, some type of baseline. Manning has been held now for almost 900 days. I think it's somewhere around 850 days by the U.S. government before trial. One military judge has already found that at least portions of his internment were inhumane. He is facing a court-martial, in other words, a military prosecution, for forwarding 700,000 government documents to WikiLeaks. According to Reuters, it's the biggest leak of classified information in U.S. history. The issue here is that the government is not charging him simply with leaking. He has already conceded those points. And of the 21 counts he is facing, although he has conceded to minor, or I should say charges that would actually carry 20 years imprisonment, he has conceded that he did leak this information. The question is whether or not, as the prosecution is attempting to prove, he is guilty of, quote unquote, aiding the enemy under the Espionage Act, specifically the violation of Article 104 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, as he is a he is military personnel. What is stunning about this is that never in the history of this country, or at least within the past 150 years, has anyone been charged with espionage for simply leaking materials to journalists. And the issue as to whether or not WikiLeaks is a journalistic endeavor has already been laid to rest by the government's own prosecutors. They have said there'd be no difference whether or not Manning had given this information to WikiLeaks or to the New York Times or the Washington Post or whomever. So the precedent being set here by this prosecution, if it succeeds in pursuing this, is that the leaking of classified information can be considered espionage. Now, 150 years ago, I think it was used during the Civil War, where someone published information in a newspaper, but it was in code. It was literally a code to, I believe it was, Confederate forces. So the story itself was a code. It was direct communication in an attempt to message something specific to the enemy. So this is a stretch, in addition to it, of course, having nothing to do with marginity. This is a stretch even based on that precedent. But that's the one that was cited by the government. The problem here, of course, is that it would create a massive chill on the press's ability to report on what the government is doing. As far as I can tell, the prosecution is trying to prove that this was aiding and abetting the enemy because Osama bin Laden wanted it downloaded and may have very well downloaded this stuff from WikiLeaks and presumably stories that were in The Guardian and in The New York Times and onto his hard drive. Now, one must imagine that there were a lot of things, a lot of articles that Osama bin Laden read about America that in some way informed him. It is not clear, by at least what the prosecution has offered at this point, or claims they will offer, it is not clear by any public statements or any reporting that this information aided and abetted the enemy in any way. You know, shortly after their huffing and puffing, there was a lot of people going out there, government officials saying, it's not a big deal. We knew all this stuff already. So to attempt to try this guy on the grounds of treason is unprecedented and will have incredible implications going forward in the event that this he is found guilty of the Espionage Act, under the Espionage Act. Like I say, Manning has already admitted to leaking. He has pled guilty to several charges, including misusing classified material, which, as I said, will carry up to 20 years of jail time. None of this is enough. A lot of people speculate that the reason why they were taking such a hard line with Manning is because what they were really trying to do was to go after WikiLeaks. And as we've seen over the past couple of weeks, through Eric Holder's behavior in responding to the big outcry that he signed off on a warrant, which explicitly said that the act of journalism, albeit criticized by some as bad craft, as practiced by this Fox reporter, James Rosen, they've already said that this act of seeking this information could be considered aiding and abetting treason, espionage. So what did Holder do? He met with the top five biggest media outlets in the country, some of the biggest players, and had a supposed off-the-record, apparently some quotes came out, but an off-the-record meeting with them. So what does this have to do with Bradley Manning and their pursuit of WikiLeaks? There have been many occasions where these big journalistic outfits will sit on a story at the government's request. The NSA wiretapping story was sat on for, I believe, a year. The story that the AP had its records subpoenaed involved them sitting on a story for a week, at least. We see many other instances of this, and I imagine there are stories that some of these press outlets have that they never publish. I think there's an intense fear in the national security apparatus that they will not have the opportunity to do this with outfits like WikiLeaks. That they will not have a partner in subjugating information the way that they have had from major media outlets. Now,
one could say, and I think there is a legitimate argument to say, that this is in some way problematic. I can't recall, but I believe there were some in the media who knew about the D-Day invasion and did not publish that information in World War II. I could see that the government would be concerned that a WikiLeaks or a non-traditional media outlet may decide that we're not going to do that. Nevertheless, I think this is something that you're not going to be able to stop anyways. And so coming up with a better set of policies that do not end up infringing upon the one of the main purposes of the First Amendment in this country, that we have a vibrant press, needs to be found. And you know, I'm, in many respects, just echoing with people like Lawrence Tribe said. Let me quote him. Charging any individual with the extremely grave offense of aiding the enemy on the basis of nothing beyond the fact that the individual posted leaked information on the web and thereby knowingly gave intelligence information to whoever could gain access to it there does indeed seem to break dangerous new ground. Could have far-reaching consequences for chilling freedom of speech and rendering the internet a hazardous environment, well beyond any demonstrable national security interest. The U.S. government is not going to be seeking supposedly the death penalty for Bradley Manning, but they could. Under the aiding the enemy provision. So, this case is going to be a big deal, and fortunately, there seems to be a lot more press attention given to the case than was given to the pre-trial hearings. And I think to a large extent that has to do with the lack of reporters being there, short of people like Alexa O'Brien and Kevin Gostola and one or two others, shaming the big media people. And that story really getting out. So there you have it. Let's move on. Let me take a couple of IMs, and then I'll do another story. Hopefeld, that is way too long. You got to email me that, buddy. Copy it, email it to me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Teddy Goodson, let's not be down on Rush fans. Their sad eardrum, filling complete with the jiggling underarm fat, are a source of endless entertainment. I'm not sure what you're talking about. You need a new segment. Libertarians Gone Wild. You'll get loads of popularity. It'll be known as the Cedar Market instead of the Free Market. People are responding to some of the recent libertarian callers that we've had on the program. We have some of them, a select few, posted on our YouTube channel if people are interested. Umar, Sam, you teased a story on Friday about water being confirmed on Mars and never got to it. My 5-year-old son recently had an angry argument with another 5-year-old about whether there is water on Mars. It's nice to know he was ultimately right. P.S. Request for more science stories, at least on Fridays. Yes, we're going to get back to that. But yes, they have they came across a bed, apparently, with very smooth rocks. The type of smooth rocks you only find in past riverbeds, because the water obviously rushing through basically sands them down. FYI, as you suggested, I called Senator Warren's office to voice appreciation for her efforts regarding student interest rates, as well as being told to hold big banks accountable. I find such calls are easier than calling to complain about stuff. No doubt. I am Jimmy Sullivan. Hey, Sam, will I be able to watch your Hartman appearance on your YouTube channel, the Sammy Cam, Hartman's website? At the very least, it'll be on Hartman's website. We may or may not have a YouTube stream of it as well. Will it be Matt and Michael producing or Hartman's crew? Aren't they all in Washington? team effort. They'll be helping out in Washington. Matt and Michael will be helping here. Matt will be playing sound. Indeed. And Michael will, I don't know, maybe be taking paid vacation here.
Color commentary.
Yeah, maybe color commentary. MSNBC contributor Michael Eric Dyson. Eric Holder is the Moses of our time. I don't know how to respond to that. Michael just thinks it's funny. I'm not sure what the context of that is.
Do you need to know the context for that?
I'm hoping he's referring to a different Moses. Maybe there's a Moses I'm just simply not aware
of. Is this bookie?
Right. From, I have no idea.
I have such a soft spot for Michael Eric Dyson, partially because he's just so ridiculous.
That seems to be.
I love the way he just amps it up. He's like, no. Not only am I not going to step out of the limb on Eric Holder, he's Moses.
He's Moses.
Yeah. How about that?
That's pretty.
I look at him more as a Noah.
Let's get to this. I want to get back to Turkey in a moment, but this sound is just too good to pass up. And in fact, it is relevant in, I think, for Chris Christie. Now, it's interesting. We do not hear as much about this. But certainly around the time that the Atlas Shrugged lady, or Pam Geller, was attempting to tell New Yorkers that if there was an Islamic community center with a chapel, essentially, or a mosque inside that's not really a mosque, but a chapel, within five blocks of Ground Zero, then I don't know what was supposed to happen after that, but it was bad. There was a lot of talk around that time, too, about Governor Christie being a Muslim sympathizer by these Tea Party folks. And that is because in New Jersey, there's a fairly sizable Muslim population, and he'd want to alienate them. He needed everybody he could get back in the day. As you can see, he's tried to sort of tiptoe right a little bit more quietly so that he can remain in contention. But also on that list, compiled by the nut jobs like Frank Gaffney and other Tea Party anti-Muslims, was Grover Norquist. And that apparently is still in play. Kathy Adams, president of the Texas Eagle Forum.
You already know it's good.
Yes. Provided a presentation on radical Islam and the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, Grover Norquist apparently is married to a woman of Muslim background.
Kuwaiti.
But she is Muslim as well. I don't know how practicing. And apparently the Far North Dallas Tea Party posted a video this week of this PowerPoint presentation by Kathy Adams, who points to certain physical traits about Grover Norquist that tells us he has probably, at this point, adopted the Muslim religion. Try and guess what that is, folks. And if you can, then I feel bad for you. And if you can't, then I understand. Because this almost sounds like just a bad sketch. But here it is. Here's the audio of that presentation. Understand she has a picture of Grover Norquist up on her PowerPoint.
There is an organization in a very key place in American politics headed by Grover Norquist. Many of us know him because oftentimes we like what he says about economic issues. But Grover Norquist is trouble with a capital T. As you see, he has a beard and he's showing signs of converting to Islam himself. He's married a Muslim woman. But he denies that he has converted himself. He denies that. Well, It's interesting that he started this Islamic Institute, and then he changed it to say, okay, well, we'll call it the Islamic Free Market Institute, because he's trying to mainstream them. He and Karl Rove are very good friends. I don't like Karl Rove, and I certainly don't like Vladimir.
Now, what's interesting is also that they don't like Karl Rove, which shows this split in the sort of the national apparatus of the Republican Party and the Republican base. But quite obviously, an anemic attempt at a beard by Grover Norquist, which he's been growing for years, is paralleled only by the two faces that I'm looking at right now of my producers, who also seem to be adopting signifiers that they may be converting to Islam. Michael doesn't seem to have shaved for several days. Matt doesn't seem to have shaved maybe since junior high. So clearly, what we're seeing here is some type of change in the office. Now, I concede I have 2 days' worth of growth myself. But in my case, one should be more concerned as to whether or not I'm becoming Orthodox, an Orthodox Jew. So there you have it, folks. They're still crazy after all these years. All right, let's just take a moment. I just want to catch you up on what's going on in Turkey. And tomorrow, on tomorrow's podcast, just to be clear again, if you want to listen live today, we will have a live audio stream of, I believe, of Tom Hartman's show, if we can figure that out. If not, we'll put a link to it, and maybe we can embed it in our homepage. We will also provide the audio as our podcast tomorrow, Tuesday, so that Matt can get a well-deserved break, and Michael can also take one as well. But if you want to listen live to the program from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern today, you can do that. You'll also hear it tomorrow as a podcast. So just again to run down what has been taking place in Turkey, and it's fascinating because, and I can't quite tell, and I've seen some personal emails written to some folks that are on an email list that I am too, but a part of that, to what extent the concerns within Turkey that their secular tradition was under threat plays into this. Apparently, this issue of the park known as Taksim Square, this is in Istanbul, and Gezi Park, which is part of that square. These plans were first announced in 2011. The idea was that they would tear down basically a lot of things in this square to make create trees, old shops that have been there for literally hundreds of years, I think, in some instances, to house a shopping mall and condominiums. It would also destroy one of the few green spaces left in the city. It would obliterate the public character of Taksim Square. And there is some speculation that part of the agenda, if not, and less speculation, that one of the byproducts of this is that you're taking away one of the biggest public spaces where people meet, gather, exchange information, and communicate with each other. So over the past, well, I guess only 6 to 8 months or so, there have been growing protests as the size of this project and what it involves has grown. In March of 2013, the MX Theater, which has been in operation since 1924, like providing independent cinema, was demolished. In December, a pastry house, which has been in the same location for 70 years or so, 80 years, was destroyed. Back in early May, this is as late as May 28th, 50 protesters were protecting trees in outer borders of the park. On May 29th, protesters were continuing their occupation of Gezi Park. Protesting the destruction of somewhere between 350,000 and 2 million trees. Depends on who you're talking to. And then apparently in the early morning hours of May 31st, only 4 days ago, police attacked now the protesters who had gathered, who had numbered in the thousands, who were gathering in Gezi Park and Taksim. The police are using indiscriminate use of tear gas. They're throwing canisters into hotels, cafes, into the metro station where people had taken refuge. By early morning of June 1st, thousands started to march from the Asian side of Istanbul to Taksim, crossing the Bosphorus Bridge on foot. And apparently what has happened, even though the government has done its best to sort of like shut down media reporting of this, apparently CNN, the Turkish version of CNN, or CNN International, I'm not sure exactly what it's called, CNN Turk, was during the course of this incredible crackdown, CNN International was showing the protests, CNN Turk was showing a documentary about penguins. According to some reports, police have been attacking citizens with pepper gas, Agent Orange, which apparently has been banned, pressure water cannons, and they're using civilian police police forces against the protesters. And apparently maybe using people who are sort of put in there to infiltrators to create more tension to justify their crackdowns. And this is ongoing at this point. And it's not quite clear what this mutates into in terms of conflating the sort of strong-arming by Erdogan, the prime minister. Am I pronouncing it wrong?
Erdogan,
the prime minister. Whether this is going to sort of mutate into a larger sort of secularist revolt, it's unclear.
It's also a leftist. It's a secular and a leftist thing. Are kind of, there's overlap, but there's differences.
Big overlap, I would imagine, though, right?
I mean, in some ways, because the traditional secularist parties, in some respects, were not very democratic. And so you had a thing where this party, Erdogan's party, which is a kind of right-leaning Islamic party, was actually much more democratizing when they first got into power. But that shifted, too. So these different aspects of opposition seem like they're kind of coming together. Against the market policies of Erdogan and against the anti-secular policies of Erdogan, too.
There you have it. We have a resident Turkey expert, right? How long did you live there?
Oh, just 7 months or so. Know a lot of
just 7 months.
Stay in touch with people over there. It's a really beautiful country.
Yeah, I've heard very good things. All right, folks. That's all we're going to be doing today. If you want to tune in later in the program, all right, let's get a couple more IMs, just a couple of people weighing in. Umar, Sam, now with two kids, are the chances of you ever getting back into gaming null? If not, would you kindly play BioShock? I know that seems like a weird statement, but it will bring a smile to the faces of a few listeners who played through the game. I'm not all Muslim on Saturday mornings and become progressively more Muslim until the next Saturday morning, says Umar. the chances of me gaming for a while are significantly diminished by the arrival of my second child. But BioShock is first on the list. Carl Sagan, are you posting the audio from Hartman's television program as a podcast? Yes, I will tomorrow. Bartleby, Sam, another good show. Breaking SCOTUS rules 5-4 that it's okay for police to take DNA samples from from people who have been arrested for serious crimes. Arrestingly, Breyer joined the majority and Scalia was in the dissent. Yes, and surprisingly, Sotomayor and Kagan were pretty strong, particularly Kagan, because there was some indication that maybe she was not so great on such civil liberties questions. So that's at least a decent sign. All right, folks, we're going to sign off. We'll be back on at 3 p.m. And final IM of the day will go to Jay Tingle. Are you going to shave before the Hartman show? Unlikely. Hartman doesn't even shave. So take that. All right, folks. For those of you who will be listening live this afternoon, we'll talk to you then. For those of you who won't, we will bring you that Tom Hartman hour and a half, hour and 40 tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somewhere I lost my drive, between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Shifting in and out of gear, waiting for my moment to happen. I don't know how much longer I can stay in, or how much more I got to pay to play in. I know somehow the lights got graded, somewhere before the credits faded. But my pilot light shining, pilot light shining bright.